Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. For years now, we've heard from countless members of the Entree Architect community asking for more marketing and branding resources from Entree Architect. Well, we've been listening, and we've been hard at work. This week, we launched a new curriculum-based online training program to help you build a better brand. And it's built just for you, the small firm entrepreneur architect. You'll discover how a powerful brand can transform your firm at the Entree Architect Build Your Brand Workshop. Learn more right now at entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 276, and this is part two in a series of episodes recorded live from the RCAD booth at the AIA Conference in Architecture in Las Vegas. I teamed up with my friends Evan Troxell and Cormac Phelan of ArchiSpeak Podcast, and Lance Psycho of Inside the Firm podcast. And we sat down for 3 hours on Friday afternoon and met with some very interesting and inspiring people. It was a nonstop conversation about dozens of topics, about what's happening today and what we see for the future of architecture and the architecture profession. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, live from the AIA Conference on Architecture, part two. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and much more at RCAT.com. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. And Young Architect Conference, the architecture conference dedicated to the emerging professional. Yeah, Robert, talk a little bit about the other things that you guys are doing. Because it's interesting from an architect's point of view with some of the niche sites that you've built. And I know that's not part of Monograph, but I think architects would be interested in that because they have, you know, ideas. And that's part of your SEO strategy. You sort of built those to sort of learn how to build competitive SEO, and they've done great with those. And so what are some of those ideas that are separate from Monograph but architects might be able to learn from?
So what's interesting is we took on a lot of these smaller projects to essentially tool up our own ability to be very good SEO professionals. And some of those projects, like HTML Color Codes, does 1.5 million views a month. It's insane.
Isn't that incredible?
And it's completely monetized by ads. We're ranked number one on a number of different keywords that point right back to that site. And it's a great source of revenue in terms of like architects looking for alternative supplemental revenue. If you find a niche, if you find a keyword that has a lot of volume, you can use that as a case study to essentially like optimize and win that keyword. and a revenue model would be having ads on that website.
Yeah, it's super interesting. It's htmlcolorcodes.com.
So as a collective, we own a few. HTML Color Codes is the one that performs the best.
Yeah.
But we also have Chinese New Year. If you look up ChineseNewYear.net, we have that one as well. So we do experiment between tools and content-based sites.
Yeah, it's such a cool idea. I mean, so architects, you know, they're doing their daily thing. They come up with an idea. They search for it. It's not there. You could build this little niche site that solves this one little problem. Like HTML color codes literally is a converter. You're looking for the code for a specific color. You pick the color. It tells you the code. That's all it is.
So you do a Google
search for HTML color codes because that's what you're looking for. You land on that site and you find it. And then you monetize it by putting ads on the site. And they make, you know, good salary and good money with
Yeah, I love it. You're diversifying through a series of niches.
Right.
Like you went to the niche, and you got all these legs to stand on.
Yeah. And then you learn about SEO, and then you apply that to the mothership of Monograph.
The whole goal, as individuals, we believe, like, trying and testing on a number of different small side projects. Projects that are, like, the scopes are really small, but, like, we can gain a lot of knowledge, new knowledge or deeper knowledge by doing really short sprint exercises. SEOs, how do we do it? How do we structure content? How do we optimize? How do we rank? These are all common questions that don't only apply to, let's say, static HTML code color websites, but they can apply to an architect's core business, right? Their core website. How do you optimize so that they're ranked number one locally if they're doing a lot of local work? What does it take? How do you get there? What are backlinks? How do you get them? Because these are really valuable assets as a small business owner in architecture to be ranked as high as you can locally if you're doing a lot of local work.
And I'm going to do a quick little plug for the membership at Entree Architect. Robert did a masterclass on that specific topic where, you know, how do you build SEO, get your rankings up on your site as an architect. Mm-hmm. And so he sort of went into the back, gave us a little bit of the secret sauce inside the membership. So anybody who has a membership has access to that.
It might be after this podcast.
I love it. Yeah, it should be.
I feel like I'm getting a new nickname every time I go somewhere new, though. So today I'm Secret Sauce.
Very cool. So do you do any architecture work, or is it just, is this full-time with you, Monograph and all the other websites that you talked about? Is that where most of your time is spent at this point? Yeah.
So we started off as an agency first, so we're building software as a service. Our side projects were, and this is just like a traditional service-based model, so we had our highs and low months, just like architecture.
Yeah.
So during our low months, that's when we did the side projects. We are now transitioned where we're 100% focused on Monograph.
Very cool.
So we don't have any more clients, and this is the same stigma. Like, we were just really tired of client work. And, like, we really wanted to build a product that helps the industry. Like, me and my two co-founders are all trained as architects. Our background's in architecture. All of our friends are architects. We can build software. Like, we're trying really hard to find what's the right mission, what's the right type of project to solve. To help the industry.
Very cool. All right, so we just had Reg Prentice from Tonic DM join us, and Reg and Robert know each other, I think, pretty well already. But we thought it'd be cool for you guys to overlap because, I mean, maybe you guys could just talk real quickly about how you know each other, maybe a little bit about 060, and just what wild ride you guys have been on for the last, I don't know, 6 months. I think we saw both you guys at AU last year. Mm-hmm. So just maybe talk about that and help the other entrepreneurs maybe who might listen to this out there about like kind of navigating what you've navigated to this point.
Well, I've been talking a lot, so maybe I'll let Ridge take the first stab at this and maybe also introduce yourself.
Yeah, hold it really close.
So I'm Reg Prentice with Tonic DM. We're the world's most advanced project information management system built specifically for architects and engineers. Mm-hmm.
That's a great tagline.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
It's a long tagline. Robert and I met each other in the Trimble 060 Accelerator Program, mm-hmm. which we did last year, which was a program set up by Trimble to help young startup companies develop and grow within the industry. I think Robert and I hit it off because we both have similar ideas about software for the design industry, which is things that are easy to use, resonate with designers, and are just practical tools for getting your work done in a design firm on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. No, I think you've nailed it. Just helping architects get the job done.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think doing it in a way which is very easy, doesn't require a ton of training, doesn't disrupt the firm's normal processes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in contrast to a lot of other technologies which are a big workflow disruption and require the architects to change their workflow, I think we're interested in systems which just fit right in and help architects in their day-to-day work.
Reg, can you talk a little bit more specifically about what the tool is and how it works? Most of the community who's listening here are probably smaller firms, mid to small firms, and so how does that work with them and what do they do?
Okay. So one of the main problems we solve is correspondence, email management. So even in a small firm, you're going to have a number of different staff members and a number of different projects. So we make it really easy for the staff to organize their email by project. So everyone in the firm can see what's happening on each project rather than those emails being locked away in individual mailboxes. We also handle file transfer. So it's always tricky to send large files through email. So we have a system which is as easy to use as email, but you can attach large files to it and it creates a transmittal automatically. It logs when those files are downloaded. And then tracking RFIs and submittals. So we even have customers that are sole proprietors who just use our system for the file transfer capability and the RFI and submittal tracking, because those are things which you can do them yourself in Excel or just through Dropbox. But it's nice to have it in a system which is project-based. So everything is filed under its project, and it's in a standardized format.
Are you an architect?
I do. I wouldn't say I'm an architect, but I went to architecture
you're
school.
Trained as an architect.
I graduated architecture. I actually started at Frank Gehry's office. So after school, I moved from New Zealand to Los Angeles and spent 11 years working with Frank Gehry on the technology side. So I was part of the IT team. And I enjoyed it because with a background in architecture, you know, and being a technology-focused person, you know, where's better to work in that environment than Frank Gehry's office? And then I spent 9 years at Gensler in Los Angeles after that. So it was a little bit of a switch from a smaller firm with a kind of sole founder mentality to a very large firm where there are multiple studios, multiple principals, kind of global design business. So I feel like I got both sides of the coin on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What was the origin story? What was the seed that created the what you're doing today?
So at Gehry's office and at Gensler, my role was specifically around information management. So I dealt a lot with CAD, less with 3D, but a lot just with the process of design documentation. How information flows between the GC and the architect, the consultants, back to the architect, back to the GC. And I felt there wasn't a tool on the market which really made that easy for offices. There are some tools on the market for managing that, but they are just cumbersome. There's a lot of friction. Sometimes they're just too expensive, so they're just priced out of particularly the small firm range. And I felt there was a real missing element there that needed to be filled for the profession, because obviously as professionals we want to keep great records and have and be very organized so that we are professionals. But I just didn't feel there was a good system that was easy to use and priced affordably for that purpose.
Yeah, very interesting. Do you guys have any questions?
I don't know what you guys just talked about, because I just
saw talking about you.
I just saw Roman Mars. He's right there, and I told him we're recording our podcast here, so he's basically here with us right now, right?
Roman Mars, no? the R-cast.
Yeah, on the R-cast. So, I like I said, I don't know what you guys just talked about, but Reg, we're using Tonic in our office, and I think what you were talking about as far as ease of use and something getting out of the way is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. One of the things that your guys' stuff does is it automates, like it learns as you go, right? If you have a project set up, it's trying to learn and take away the back of house work that people have to do by themselves.
Right. Well, one of the there's two forms of kind of ease of use. One is when you're setting the system up and configuring it. A lot of technology is just beyond any architecture firm that doesn't have professional IT people.
Yeah.
So we've designed this specifically so that it's super easy to set up. You can get started very quickly. It's more of a consumer style of system setup, like something you just expect. You just log in and it works, right? You don't have to do some crazy IT stuff to get it set up. So even large firms appreciate that because no one has extra IT time. IT is always overwhelmed. Right. So that's one part of the ease of use.
More and more work is falling on their shoulders every day. So yeah, anything that you can do. Because the more we're actually becoming technology companies who do architecture. That's how I frame it in our the size of firm that we are. So I think that the burden is becoming more and more increased on a very small team, typically.
Right. So we try to take that burden off by just having software which just works.
Yeah.
And the second one is for the staff. Like, people just don't have time to do elaborate training right now. Like, Revit, yeah, okay, you will go to training for that. But for email management and file sharing, are you really going to spend days in training learning to use it? So we typically give a 30-minute overview for the staff because they need to know this is a new system the office is going to use. This is how we're going to manage the information. But they don't really need to be shown how to use Tonic because it's just easy to use, right? We cut down the number of buttons. We spent a long time removing buttons from our software because more buttons just means more overhead, more complexity. And we want this to be as simple as possible for the staff to use. So they don't require elaborate training, and they can get good value out of the system.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So with the 060 Accelerator program, can you guys just talk about... We've mentioned that on our show before, just to kind of talk about... You know, one of the things that has definitely been identified over and over again in the architectural profession is the very low amount of innovation over time, right? And so it seems to me like... Accelerator programs like that, and there's a few of them out there, but that's one. And just to tie it all together, Lucas and German were both students of mine at Cal Poly. Now they're doing this cool thing, you know, that it's coming out of Gary Technologies. Now Trimble bought it. Now they're running this 060 Accelerator, which is awesome, right? They're trying to do something for the profession,
right?
And they're investing or in many different types of ways, whether it's office space or ideas or dollars even in some cases, right, to get ideas like your guys off the ground. So can you just talk about what that program is, because Lucas isn't here right now, but maybe represent what they're doing, and so people can look it up and just look into if they have entrepreneurial ideas, maybe there's help that they can get.
Yeah. The website, I believe, is 060.io.
Okay.
And they have applications open right now. For their new cohort for 2019.
And so they do four different, like a cohort is like four companies? Is that how it works?
I think it's a small cohort, but I think it's variable.
Okay.
They'll look at the applicants and try to find good fit for the program.
Right.
I think innovating in architecture specifically is very, very difficult because architects need professional software. You know, it's not a toy.
Yeah.
And so when you're building a piece of software, you can't just code something up overnight and then expect people to buy it.
Yeah.
Right? They need something which is pretty mature before it really works in a professional situation.
Yeah.
So it makes innovation quite difficult for startup companies because you have to get a long way with the technology before you can expect people to pay for it and actually use it in an office.
Yeah.
And I don't say that as a negative. I think that's just the way the profession is. It's a profession, and it's a very important profession. And you can't sell people toys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think getting over that hurdle of you have to create a really great product before people are willing to pay for it, that's one of the hurdles in our area.
Yeah, I think because it's so complicated to make a building, and like software needs to also address complicated issues. Like Monograph dashboard right now, like it took 2 years to build before our first beta user was even using it. It's because there's so much work to make sure we covered before we even hit our MVP, our minimum viable product. It just takes a long time. That said, like back back to 060, like it's an amazing program, just in the ability of connecting other startups together.
Yeah.
And sharing
like-purposed individuals.
Individuals, yeah.
Not necessarily like-minded, right? But I always like to go back to like-purpose, because you guys want to make this stuff better for people, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's really the goal.
And I applaud Trimble and Lucas and German for working on this, because they're trying to get the startups, to help the startups over that hump.
Right.
And they do that by, as you said, offering some office space, a lot of ideas, and kind of assistance with that. Like, we're implementing an idea now that German introduced me to, and it's just like, it's transformational for us.
You want to talk about your future plans? Or
yeah, we don't mind talking about our future plans.
Cool.
So, but I was just going to say, any help that you get from companies like Trimble is really valuable to startups, because it is so hard in this industry.
I think what's so neat about that is Trimble's a big company,
right?
And there's only a few of these big companies, and to see the way that they're investing in very small companies
right.
to help your ideas get big is very different than the way other companies work.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of companies are just looking out for themselves, right? And to
right.
me, this is definitely a gesture that is different than that.
Yeah. And they're both great, great people with a deep understanding of the industry. So working
right.
with them and with the other people in the cohort, with
right.
Ian and Robert, and
right.
in our case, that was huge. Like Robert said, it can be very lonely out there. And having a team of like-minded people is really great.
Like-purpose.
Like-purpose people.
Like-purpose people.
Yeah.
No, I find that way... For me, personally, that was the number one asset in terms of joining the program, because I get paired with a similar startup in a similar phase, and we can address similar problems together and work on them together. And that means so much versus being siloed in our own office and trying to resolve problems by just throwing darts at a dartboard.
We'll be right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and Young Architect Conference. Do you remember when you started your architecture firm? It was no small feat. It took many late nights and many early mornings. Bottom line, you've been insanely busy ever since. So why not make things a little bit easier now? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners like you. It's simple and it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than the dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional looking invoices in 30 seconds and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part, FreshBooks grows alongside your business. So you'll always have the tools you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free today, 30 days, no catch, no credit card. Try it for free at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. Are you an emerging architect? Do you want to failure-proof your career? Then you will want to attend the Young Architect Conference on August 23rd through the 25th in Portland, Oregon. This conference, which was created by Young Architect founder Mike Rasika, is all about feeding your connection and knowledge necessary to truly succeed in architecture as a young architect. That means you'll learn the next most powerful steps you can take after receiving your license. You'll learn how to be a better leader. You'll learn how to build your brand, stand out in a competitive market, use social media, and grow a following. You'll also learn how you can leverage your talent and values to give back in the most meaningful way. You ready to save your spot? Space is limited, so grab it now. Visit entrearchitect.com/youngarchitect. That's entrearchitect.com/youngarchitect and use our promo code ENTREE, ENTRE, and you'll save $150 when you register. That's entrearchitect.com/youngarchitect and use the promo code ENTREE. RCAT, FreshBooks, and Young Architect Conference. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
So I asked Robert the same question. Are you seeing any other design professions pick up pure software and start utilizing it as well? I mean, there's a lot of parallels, right? Engineers work in the right. same sort of methods.
So we focus on A and E. So a lot of our best customers are actually engineers. We find when it comes to organization of information, that gels immediately with engineers because they think kind right. of in an organized way. So engineers definitely, as well as architects. Outside of that, we haven't focused on that demographic. Technically, Tonic would work for any company that uses project numbers. So any professional services company could probably use it. But we have tried to remain very focused on AE, just because we want to capture that market, and so we're staying very focused on that at the moment.
Can you also make a piece of software that would enable them to answer the phone quicker or return calls? Because that's a bane of my existence with engineers. It's a joke.
Well, I'm thinking like the phone has almost become useless now because 90% of the calls are just spam.
Yeah,
it's yeah. Like, I hardly answer my phone anymore because it's the Social Security Administration telling me my
right.
my number's
the
been
IRS,
compromised.
Right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have a question that I'm always interested in with people who were trained as architects who have gone off into a different path and have become focused more on the tech side. That transition from, okay, I'm an architect, I've been trained as an architect, I've invested my time and my money and my brain power to become an architect, and then something happens in your career and you see there's a new path. That point, was that a difficult transition to make that transition, and how did you do that?
So I'll take a first stab. I know how to code a little bit, but I'll be completely transparent. I write zero code. Like, even though I'm trained as architect now running a tech company, I write zero code. I'm not a software engineer. I would never call myself a software engineer. So where I think the architectural education becomes super valuable is knowing how to contextualize problems, right? Like, we're at the core, we're still solving problems. We're still trying to make things for a specific audience. This is no different than when I was designing a building. It's just the context of how I'm solving it is a little bit different, and the medium and how I execute that is also a little bit different.
Yeah.
So
do you do storyboards? I mean, how are you sort of laying out what the vision is?
We draw all the time in the office. We sketch all the time in the office. We're architects are visual, so the only way to really solve for a visual audience is we also have to be visual in our approach to solving problems. So we draw a lot in the office, and like one of the core problems of almost any software, not just project management software, is double entry, right? Where you're repeatedly asked the same information in multiple areas of the software. To solve that, there's no really other way to lay out the context. Like, how many times are we going to ask this question? And let's make sure that we don't ever ask architects to enter the exact same information ever more than once. You cannot simply solve that problem by just writing code. Like, you have to really understand the landscape of the situation. The following question was like, was it hard? It wasn't really that hard. I think it was like a long, slow transition. Mm-hmm. Like, I immediately,
so it was an evolution?
It was an evolution. Like, immediately after my MArch and MS degree at Michigan, I started a project called SectionCut.com, which was a curated collection of architectural resources for students. Really, it was a personal project. I finished my MArch degree. I was working on my portfolio before my tenure at SOM. And I wanted a way to essentially archive everything I learned in graduate school. How do I save all the plugins to Rhino, all the digital tools that I was using? How do I save all the scripts? How do I save all the texts? How do I save all the theory books? Like, I don't want to forget that knowledge. And that's really how SectionCut was formed. So I kind of always had one foot in, one foot out in terms of like building little projects. And
was that mindset shift, did that happen at SectionCut or Monograph, where you went from the label, I'm an architect who's doing tech, to now I'm a tech entrepreneur who is an architect?
So I think that happened when I stopped working in architecture. So me and my two co-founders,
Alex. So early
and
Mark, on.
Early on, yeah. We decided to pair up. We were all essentially freelancing on the side. And it was like, well, we can command a larger fee if we weren't considered freelancers.
Yeah.
Right? We can now essentially have a little bit more value-based pricing because now we're seen as a company and not individuals providing freelancer consultancies. So when we paired up and started Dixon & Moe or umbrella company,
yeah.
I stopped labeling myself as an architect because I'm not designing buildings anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like you're the true software architect though. That's such a contentious label. But you're
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
I finally met it. You're the software architect.
I have a new nickname, right? Like I've transitioned secret sauce to like software architect.
What about you, Red?
For me it was a difficult transition. I've always considered myself an architectural professional. Even at school I started writing code. So like Robert, I have a background in kind of coding. I was never particularly good at it. I was like an enthusiastic amateur.
Yeah.
But for example, when Frank Gehry's office spun off Gehry Technologies, I chose to stay with Gehry Partners because I always wanted to be part of the architecture firm and part of the architecture process rather than a technologist.
Yeah.
But over time, I came to realize that my contribution to the profession as a whole was going to be in the technology field. It's definitely not going to be in the design field, that's for sure. So at that point, I started to transition in my mind that, you know, if I'm going to make a lasting contribution to the profession, then I need to embrace the idea that I'm going to be a technologist primarily for the architecture space.
And I guess to follow up on that, Reg, since both you guys, since you worked at larger firms, you didn't feel like you could do that in the firm. You felt like you really wanted to solve a problem that was much larger than just that user base. Because like that's me. I'm director of digital practice at HMC Architects. And HMC is a 350-person firm. And I'm trying to solve problems. And I'm looking for people like you guys to help me solve those problems. But we're also writing our own code. We're doing our own scripting. And we are building our own tools that solve our specific problems. So I guess the question is, you really felt like your calling was bigger than that.
I think there's a type of problem where it is absolutely the role of the firm to build tools to solve that problem.
Yeah.
And there are problems where it's absolutely not in the interests of the firm
totally.
To try to solve that problem.
We're architects. We can do everything, and we should do it all.
Yeah.
Right now.
Like the number of small firms that use Excel as their accounting system because they don't want to spend $20 a month on QuickBooks, right? I think it's hard. There's a point at which it's hard for firms to determine, is this something we should do or is this something we should let an outside professional firm do?
Yeah.
And a lot of firms end up going down the path of creating tools which are then too big for them to maintain. They without the maintenance, they fall into disuse, and that energy and that money ends up getting wasted. So I think it's important for firms to really think hard before they decide to either do heavy customization on a tool or to build a tool from scratch, because a lot of times it's just outside the reasonable purview of the firm to build that tool. And I certainly felt that with Tonic, it needed to be done. Like, I was with Gensler. Gensler has a lot of resources, but I felt, you know, even if Gensler wanted to put the resources in, it just wasn't the right kind of thing for Gensler to be building internally. It was more appropriate for an outside firm to tackle that.
Yeah, one of the reasons I love that question of mindset shift and labeling is because I think you can't do both. Like I think a lot of architects, they want to be an architect and they want to go pursue this other big idea. And when you try to do both, neither of them succeed at the level that you want them to. And so you need to either choose, I'm going to be an architect and build an architecture firm, or I'm going to go pursue this other idea. And maybe you still have your hand in architecture, but your primary focus has to be one or the other if you really want to succeed at that.
I think tools that would be relevant for an architecture firm to try to build themselves would be tools which specifically differentiate them in design. So, for example, if you're building Grasshopper scripts that produce a particular shape or particular kind of design that you want to explore as a designer, then totally go ahead and do it because that's your differentiator is design. But if you're building general office tools, like if you're trying to build your own accounting system or resource management system like Robert has, then that's not going to differentiate you as a design firm. So you really want to be buying that off the shelf.
Well, as we transition to our next guest here, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you guys. You're very much like a couple of the previous guests we had. We had UpCodes and Iris VR here. You guys are solving real problems for a variety of architecture firms out there, and I think that you're supporting the profession. And Reg, you've lectured in my class a couple times, and you're it's not a sales pitch about your software. It's about what do architects best value? How are we contributing? And you're definitely contributing, both you guys are, to our profession. And so I wanted to personally thank you. And thanks for coming to record
thanks
with us today.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for having us.
Before you go, just why don't you plug how people can reach out to you and how they can access what you're doing.
Sure. Our website is monograph.io. So feel free to sign up. There's a little chat bubble in the bottom right-hand corner. Someone will be there to answer any immediate questions. Let's say if you do want to reach me, I address all my emails, robert@monograph.io. It might take me a day. Give me 24 hours. I'm pretty busy now, but I get through everything within a 24-hour window.
All right, great. Reg, how about you?
And like Monograph, Tonic is very easy to sign up for. Our web address is tonicdm, as in documentmanagement.com. We have the little chat bubble, too, so feel free to send us a message. leave your email address in the chat so we can get back to you efficiently. You can actually sign up online, but usually we discuss the product with people first and kind of walk them through the setup. But very quick and very quick to get started and to try it. And we're very happy to work with small firms, medium or large firms.
All right, great. Well, thank you both for coming and hanging out with us for a little bit here.
Great.
Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thank you.
So our next guest
is the best friend.
Yeah, Lance, you want
to
introduce our next guest?
Nicholas Renard.
Thanks. Hello.
An American treasure.
National treasure.
Right. National treasure.
National. He's going to tell us a story.
From Jacksonville.
Oh, God. What am I telling the story about?
You didn't bring a book?
I didn't bring a book.
I thought you were going to read for us.
He's not reading.
No, that's only special.
Yeah, that's special for the besties. What have you been up to?
Just walking around this morning.
Yeah, but in practice. You're busy. You're a busy guy. You're building now.
Oh, I make it look a lot busier than we are.
Yeah.
But we have a couple big houses that we're working on. One we're building. It'll be our second new build house. We're bidding right now, in the process of bidding two other houses, but those are more remodels. And then we got two new build houses that are potential builds.
Yeah.
So it's changing.
Yeah, when we started our construction arm, this is the one question I was going to ask you on our podcast, but I'll do it now, is when we started our construction arm, the subs that we got, some were brand new, we never worked with them before. And some were, I literally poached them from good GCs, and I asked for permission first. Was it sort of the same process with you when you started building?
I mean, I wouldn't say I poached, but I've been on job sites quite a bit through my career, and I knew who I wanted to call from working with them on other projects with other contractors. So, yes, in a sense I poached, but I didn't cold call anybody.
Okay. Everybody was there.
Everybody was there.
Yeah, yeah. So where are you guys at in the building process right now on the house that you're building? You guys are almost dried in, right?
We are 100% dried in.
Okay.
They're doing exterior siding today, which is nerve-wracking because I'm here. And for the first time ever, we're using Hardy Aspire siding. So that's going on the house right now. They also scratch-coated.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. Exactly.
Nothing, right?
They're scratch coating the stucco in today, which in the jurisdiction we're building, the inspectors insist on seeing the nailing pattern on the Hardy and insist on seeing the scratch coat before they brown coat it.
Yeah.
Which is just a nightmare.
Scheduling it. Yeah.
And on top of that,
Robert, thanks for coming.
Our electrical component, our jurisdiction there, JEA, requires that our homeowner calls in to get their meter set. And I think my homeowner got a little confused, and there was some miscommunication, and so there was a lot of running around this morning trying to figure out if we had power or not, which we don't yet.
Yeah. Our previous guest, one of the topics that just came up was, they're essentially tech entrepreneurs at this point. And so we talked about having your foot in, and they were architects, trained as architects, having your foot in two different places, So, you know, you and I are similar in the sense that we're architects and builders. And it was a big wake-up call for me about 2 weeks ago with Alex. And we were on site, and I go, hey, I can't take on any more clients right now. I need to be here 100% of the time. How do you do it? Like, are you at that point, too, where you're like, I need to multiply, there needs to be another, we need to clone Nick?
We've always needed to clone Nick. You need more national treasures.
I mean, absolutely.
One Nick is
awesome.
I only
have one.
13 Nicks would be superior.
Yeah.
But what does Nick think?
Nick loves Nick, so of course Nick would like to see more Nick. I do. I hired one of the best employees I've ever had last fall, and she's been awesome in helping get everything done. You know, usually when clients come in or people ask, how are you getting it all done? And I'm like, well, I'm not getting it done. I work on two projects. Cammy does everything else.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat the case. But we're not taking new work, but we are getting a little more selective in what we take on.
Yeah. Does that include building sites? So, you know, one of the rules of thumbs, Jonathan Segal has this rule of thumb, and I live by it, is if you're going to, I haven't seen him today. I told him to stop by. He hasn't checked his messages today. But that is, you got to be, his rule of thumb is 30 minutes or less. I'm only buying this site and building on it 30 minutes or less from my house. Because I have to be within that close of contact. Are you in that? Have you been afforded that ability with this latest build and the previous one?
Yeah, so we're fortunate in where most of our work is. I can get to most of my sites in 20 minutes, and most of my work is in a very condensed area. We'll only build at the beaches in Northeast Florida because we know we can get to each one of those sites in less than 20. We do have a client pushing us to stretch us a little bit further. We may do it from a construction management point, but we're not going to be his GC because I can't be there every day.
Right, exactly.
So I have a question for you, Lance, and you, Nick, because you guys have... Nick, you just said you made one of the best hires, and obviously you guys have grown over the last 2 years into what you're doing at F9, right? So when you think back to before you had that employee and when you guys were just doing it yourselves at F9, you know, where did you see yourself in the future? I don't know how many years or whatever, but you know, at some level it's probably like, I can't afford to do this, and now that you've done it, you couldn't have afforded not to do it, kind of a thinking. I just maybe riff on that, and where have you been, where have you come, how'd you make those decisions? And then as you guys have grown at F9 too, like you guys are almost a going to move into another office soon, right?
Yeah.
Like in your development. So there's a lot going on. I'm sure a lot has happened over these years. But
do you want me to go first, Lance?
I'll just say one comment and then you go.
Okay.
And that is, the best decision we ever made was to hire a bookkeeper. That's actually who we hired almost. It was almost at the same time as our real first employee, because that took a whole level of stuff I didn't have to deal with anymore. We were at the point where we could afford to pay somebody who isn't billable, because she's not billable, to handle the taxes. We were both getting mortgages at the same time, so we had to really reconcile our books. It took us off Excel, brought us into QuickBooks, and now we're streamlined in that way. And I think that kind of opened then the next door to be able to select the right people to hire after that. That were, you know, one of the big questions I ask everybody when they go to F9 is like, are you comfortable being in the field? And they go, yeah, I would love to walk around. No. Are you comfortable swinging a hammer?
Yeah.
And I go, and they have to be comfortable with that. I need them to be out there and doing blue collar work. And they learn from it. So
yeah. That's cool.
Nick, before you answer that question, I want to introduce our next guest here who I want to overlap this conversation.
Okay.
This is Jared Zern from NCARB. And so you want to just introduce yourself, Jared? And then I'd love to sort of have you get into this conversation here.
Well, thank you very much. My name is Jared Zern. I currently am the Vice President of Examination at the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, which means I oversee the operation and development of the architect registration exam. Prior to joining NCARB, I was a small practitioner, a sole proprietor in northern Minnesota, and I also taught at a community college.
You're the NDSU alum, right?
I am an NDSU.
All right, go Bison. Yeah, me too.
North Dakota State
North
University.
North Dakota State. I thought so. Yep. Yeah, I was super happy they picked somebody from our alma mater. That makes the most sense.
There we go.
And we're going to wrap it up there for this episode. Come back next week to hear more from Nick Renard and thoughts from Jared Zern of NCARB about how NCARB is working hard to serve you, the small firm architect, and many, many more guests. This is just the tip of the iceberg here. We have a bunch more guests and more information to share with you. But before we go, I want to remind you to take a look at the Entree Architect Build Your Brand Workshop. It's a brand new offering from Entree Architect. We've been working hard to develop this new 6-week training program that will help you assess where you are right now, decide where you want to go, and how to build a brand to get you there. With architect marketing expert Jeff Eccles and me as your guides, the Build Your Brand Marketing Workshop includes 6 live webinar training sessions via Zoom video conference, so you can tune in from the comfort of your home or your office. 6 live coaching calls, they're separate from the training, 6 live coaching calls, so you can have your questions answered live, stay motivated, and be held accountable for getting all this work done, so you can finally have this marketing system, this new brand that will guide you to your success. Jeff and I will guide you every step of the way. Unlimited access to all the session recordings, so you can review them and catch up at all your convenience whenever you need to. And a private member forum powered by Slack just for this group, for group support and check in from Jeff and I. We'll be able to answer any questions whenever you want. It's there for you. And you can collaborate and support your fellow members at the workshop. And a private online resource portal filled with downloads, links, and additional resources about marketing and branding. And a digital download, step-by-step Entree Architect Build Your Brand Guide to take with you. So you have everything you need to continue to build this brand, to continue to use your brand. This program, developed by Jeff Eccles with more than 20 years of practice application and refinement, the Entree Architect Build Your Brand Workshop teaches a proven marketing and branding system created specifically for you, the small firm architect. Are you ready to start attracting the projects you want, the clients you need, and the fees you deserve? Yes, you are. Then visit entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand right now and enroll. Seats are limited. There's only 20 spots, so grab your spot right now today. That's entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand. And if you are an entrepreneur architect who runs or owns your own small firm, yes, that's you. You're an Entree Architect. And I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. We'll see you at the workshop, entrearchitect.com/buildyourbrand. Go check it out. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault. or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.